Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today, and I'm trying to convince myself it's also a pleasure to be here for longer than I had intended, since my flight home today was canceled, and now my class tomorrow is canceled. I'm going to be talking about mobile health search, and had a lovely segue into my talk. I have nothing to disclose, except I will disclose that I was just given a copy of the casual vacancy, and I started reading it last night, and there I was with health search. So it's talking that there had been a death, and somebody who had very little information about this dropped into her favorite medical website, entered the words brain and death. The suggestions were endless. It was actually a very funny passage. Nothing about mobile health search, unfortunately. So I have what I guess will be the easiest agenda of anybody at APHA, which is I'll be talking about the past only a little bit. I'll be talking about the present primarily, and I'm going to conclude with talking about the future. So a very common scenario is that somebody gets a new diagnosis, or like the passage from J.K. Rowling's book, that you hear about something, there's something in the news, so you go online searching for information. And in the distant past, you relied on literature, family, friends, and through what I love this term, the democratization of medical information, now that moved to you're looking it up online at home and sometimes perhaps to your boss's dismay at work. I coined the term democratization of location because what our mobile devices have done for us is given us the ability to look it up any place or virtually any place. Of course, this has presented public health issues because people walk into telephone poles, step off curbs much more frequently than they used to. But I find myself, too, I'm standing waiting for the elevator, and you just take that moment to do something. Let me start with posing the question, are people using mobile devices? Who knows where the country that has the largest number of mobile devices? China. China. India is number two, U.S. number three. So we have a large number of mobile subscribers in the U.S., and we have more mobile subscribers than we have people. Smartphones just recently outnumbered what seems to now cell phones, like the ones that you can just make phone calls on and text, now seem to be called feature phones. And there are more of them than there are more smartphones. And there are all these really interesting changes that are taking place. One of the courses I teach is on mobile health design, and one of the enormous advantages of this is I invite people in as guest lecturers who have enough fun that when I contact them and say, oh, can you give me some interesting data about mobile health search, they have provided me with a lot of interesting information that I'll be talking about. Pew Internet and American Life has looked at the notion of the digital divide, which used to be, do you have access to a computer? Then it switched to, do you have access to broadband? And now it's really kind of dissipating, and one of the things that they found is that smartphone ownership is actually higher proportionally amongst Hispanics and African Americans than whites. What they've also found is that 34% of U.S. households are wireless only, and I know Pew in particular has been really instrumental in understanding that if you do surveys using traditional phones, that you're only getting a small percentage of the population. But are people using one device or are they using many? 40% of U.S. households have three or more mobile devices, and that's not including PCs and TVs. And there are some differences in where mobile devices and tablets are used and also in the frequency of use that I'll talk about. So here, I know this is hard to read. The red is mobile, the blue is tablet. So looking, for instance, at the living room, very commonly used. Now people talk about social TV, that very large numbers of people never watch TV without using a mobile device And we certainly saw that with the recent debates. People use it in the bedroom. I was kind of curious to see 30% of people use either in the bathroom. And we get down to the bottom here, churches, places of worship, which I was kind of surprised to see. And one of the things that you don't see here is the doctor's office. And I think that that's the one remaining barrier. One of my students who was interested in preventive care was actually looking at the design of mobile apps that you could use in the doctor's office to help deal with some issues of health literacy. Tablets are used more frequently than smartphones, with the exception of daily health content users. So it's interesting to start to see some of these differences in how people use some of these devices. And this is actually very recent Pew data from Susanna Fox, which I believe hasn't even yet been published. 31% of cell phone owners look for health or medical information. 9% receive text updates, and 11% have health apps. And this is looking at the distribution of apps. And not surprisingly, games, weather, GPS, that's the highest. Lifestyle and health is down very low. And just to show the distribution, a lot of it is around cardio and diet use. So what do mobile devices provide health seekers? And this is kind of the bulk of what I'm going to talk about. I'll first talk about immediacy and access, then affinity, then the multiple methods of input and output and the implications of that, and then finally context. So immediacy and access. I talked a little about people do have and use mobile devices. I think the one place that people really aren't using them is in the doctor's office. I think there is a lot of really interesting implications about some of the data about this eradication of the digital divide, and also a lot having to do with health literacy potential, and I was really excited by Dina's talk about that. And so one of the questions is, do people do different searches? Do you think they do search differently? It's too early in the morning. Nobody's... Yes, okay, you do think they search differently. So this took a lot of effort for me to find, but this is the top 10 health searches on, this is from Healthline Network, looking at the web and looking at mobile. And yes, there are some differences. I wasn't able to get 2012 data, but really significant differences. And why do you think that is? I think a lot of it actually has to do with affinity. And there was a great article in the New York Times having to do with people's attachment to their cell phones. And as you can see, they've started getting a little bit cuter and a little more lovable. People relate to computers in general and to their cell phones differently than they do to people. There's been some fascinating work by Cliff Nass at Stanford looking at that. And also by Sherry Turkle at MIT. So the relationship that you have with your device definitely impacts how you use it. And some people call this a sort of intimate, personalized relationship with their digital appendage. And it really does become your digital appendage. It becomes your memory. Can you remember phone numbers? No, because you rely on your cell phone for it. Do you even think about where you're going? No, because your GPS tells you where to go. So do people seek information differently? Yes. And that top 10 search is just, I think, a drop in the bucket. But people are looking for private, sensitive conditions, sexually transmitted diseases, mental health issues. So, and the intimacy that you feel with this device, plus the fact, let's say you're doing this at work. People can't really see what's on your screen, but someone walks into your office and they see, oh, you're doing some shopping at Amazon, or you're looking up stuff about sexually transmitted diseases. So even the device itself, the size of the device, makes a big difference. And how is use changing? So let me address that. Online research is up in every category, but the greatest growth has been in more people seeking online communities. I want to talk about input and output. And in terms of input, that what your smartphone gives you actually makes a lot of things easier. It can introduce inaccuracies, but you're getting autocomplete, you're getting things, it's suggesting words for you, so it which really changes how you are thinking about what you're searching. We also have voice. Siri, tell me blah blah blah. So that's very different. Most people don't talk to their desktop or laptop. QR codes. You're walking around, you're reading a magazine, you see a QR code, scan it, there's your information. Most people don't do that with their desktop or laptop. That's very much changing the nature of search. Also, when you're searching on your smartphone, you're searching in many possible ways. You could be searching in a mobile browser, you could be searching on a mobile website, you could be searching in an app store, you could be searching within an app. So that's opening up a lot of possibilities. And there are some differences in terms of output. Certainly screen size has an enormous impact, and also location and privacy. And people are more frequently watching videos on their smartphones. So there are a lot of changes in terms of that. This is data from ComScore, and there is more mobile health access through browsers than through apps. The number of smartphone searches, so people do search differently, and people are less likely to go through many results on their smartphone. And then the last point I wanted to talk about is context. So user controlled, there's a lot of contextual information that comes just because of the immediacy. Something's on your mind, you search for it. But there's also a lot of information that's coming in through sensors, through location awareness, and that can very much affect your search. In terms of this whole area of big data and predictive analytics, most people don't do a lot of conscious personalization, but there's a lot of personalization that's happening. Some people find it invasive, like, wow, how did you know that I'm friends with such and such? But, you know, people are also very accepting of a lot of this. So I love Greek mythology. I often feel like I'm fighting the Hydra and asking questions, and as I do my research, I only get more questions. But some of the questions just have to do with these differences between mobile browser and web browser searches, between health website and mobile site and apps, the different search processes, and even, like, one of the things I was not able to find any data on is, do people search differently when they're doing voice searches than when they're doing text searches? The limitations of screen size, how does that affect search? And it would be really interesting to look at the differences between smartphones, and in fact, smartphones differ quite a bit in size, and the different types of tablets that exist. So my starting point in this work is, are mobile devices important in considering health-seeking behavior? And I would say it's almost impossible now to focus on desktop, laptop searches without considering mobile devices. But I think that it's really important to also look at what can happen through user control and what can happen through technology-assisted devices. So in terms of the near future, I think one of the most important points is to think about mobile first, as opposed to retrofitting existing desktop, laptop practices onto a mobile phone. And I think it's the only way to be successful, and that really involves understanding also what people are doing and how people are using their mobile devices differently. The strategies used by retail are astounding. So this is the predictive analytics and big data that predict things, such as Charles Duhigg's article about how Target knows your teenage daughter is pregnant before you do, because of the patterns where somebody goes in the store, what somebody purchases. So why can't this be brought to healthcare? Because it's really expensive technology, And I think if public health had the funding to do that, we would have a much, much healthier society because technology could really assist us in making better decisions. In general, I don't think that smartphones are very smart. And I think that I hope that they're moving toward that direction, but also the many, many sensors could be used in order to give much, much better information to people. I have a Fitbit scale, which is on my wireless network, and then it talks to my smartphone, and I get all this information. But does this information integrate into my life in any way? Absolutely not. I still have to do it. And then the final thing I want to say about the future is that I think that we're going to move from these kinds of digital appendages, or what a friend of mine called cognitive prosthetic devices, to things like Google Glasses, where it's just going to be there, it's going to be on you, it's going to be giving you information, and your decision is going to be whether you pay attention or whether you don't. Thank you very much.